2 Samuel. We are at chapters 18 through 20, and we're talking about this decline of David's kingdom. And not just any kind of decline, right? A decline taking place through his family, and in this case, through his son Absalom. And not only just Absalom, but there's just a whole lot of stuff going on in this lesson. So we will talk about, you know, some of the key characters in here. I want to spend a little bit of time on Joab. Who could tell me something about Joab? He's quite an interesting guy. He likes to kill people. That's what it seems like. He's apparently good at it. Yeah. So he's. Go on. You were going to say something. Yeah. Were you about to say something?
Yeah. He's been a long and faithful servant of David for a long time in his armies.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've seen him throughout the preceding chapters, kind of always being the one that, you know, David is kind of looking to. He's the guy who's getting things done. He's certainly loyal to David, Joshua. Right?
It would seem that in talking about Joab and also looking at kind of the predecessor to Joab, was Abner. Mm-hmm. You know, these men were obviously basically the commander in chief in the sense that they ran the army for the king. Mm-hmm. And with that is a sense of obvious power.
It is.
And I think when we talk about, you know, the killing point, and even when you look back at Abner and some of the things that happened, even post Saul's death, just kind of how the reaction was, as well as kind of how Joab manipulates situations to get to the king, they absolutely use that authority. It kind of goes to their head. Mm-hmm. Not king, and they realize that, and that's why they're smart. But they still have that kind of drunk with power situation where they manipulate situations where they actually do pull some strings. Mm-hmm. And kind of mediate, if you will, to be that buffer between the situation and the king, which isn't always good.
Yeah, because you see him using some of that, his own choice and discretion about how he's actually going to get done whatever it is that the king is asking for. But we also see in there some disobedience, right? What was the instruction about Absalom? Not to kill him. It seemed pretty simple instruction, right? I mean, it was very clear. All of those who were around heard it, and we even had one of the soldiers repeating it, right, saying, "What are you talking about? I should have killed him." We both heard together. We're not supposed to do that, right? So what exactly was the situation there, as we've read about that, with Absalom and his death?
They're trying to defeat his dad in battle.
Okay.
And here he had a chance. He realized that his father was a lot better at war. And he rode underneath the terebinth tree on a mule and got caught, his hair got caught and hanging there.
Okay.
So, but the young man saw him didn't do anything, went back and told Joab, why did you kill him?
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. Because what were the words of David that kind of deal harshly with the young man? Deal gently. Deal gently with the young man.
I don't want to give Joab too much credit, but in the sense of Joab's security is linked to David's security.
It is.
Here's a guy who's challenged the king. You know, given the most recent of situation, and we talked about this, it kind of appears as if, you know, Absalom's kind of undertaking of this whole ordeal, which eventually led to all of this, was the fact that he lost respect.
Yeah.
You got to wonder, is the camp, while they're still loyal to David, you got to wonder if they really feel very secure.
quite possible, right? We see even that he has to do some convincing with David, right? Yes, I just killed your son, but hey, you shouldn't be mourning and crying about this. Right, right, yeah.
Absalom's, not Absalom, Joab's reasoning and his actions, like Josh is saying, seems to be the correct course of action. Mm-hmm. Here's the threat to the king. Now, what he didn't do is he didn't obey the king. Mm-hmm. And I think you really have to somehow come to understand that that was David's son.
Yes.
You know, that's if this had been somebody that had risen up and tried to take over power, mm-hmm, and wasn't related to David, wasn't his beloved son, David probably wouldn't think he'd have too much issue with what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So
there were a lot of people that died.
Yeah.
That were with Absalom, but it's Absalom that kind of tries to wedge.
Yeah, so we kind of got this thing in the background of this situational decision-making, right? So what am I going to do in this situation versus another one? And in the case of Joab, right, he's already determined, kind of what Josh was saying, he's already determined, my job is to protect the king at all costs, right? And regardless of what the king is thinking should be done, I need to protect the king even when he's not sure about how he should be protected. Difficult to align that kind of with, you know, how we think, right? Because in the midst of all of that is a lot of deception. There's certainly a lot of unclear motives when we talk about him killing Amasa. And so it's not always so cut and dry about what are we doing with this guy Joab, right? Levi, you were about to say something. And he's, you know, we've had other people in Scripture who do things like what he's doing. They get labeled as being shrewd kind of folks, right? You look at the end of this lesson where he's negotiating, right, with the woman at the wall. And, I mean, he clearly recognizes what could have taken place, right? And he has all of this army with him. They're certainly prepared to just destroy the city, right? And there's lots of other innocent people there that would have died as a result of that, and he's fully prepared to go through with that, right? But in the midst of all of that is a negotiation. Now, apparently, all of these folks didn't really care about how gruesome things were, right? They cut his head off and threw it over the wall. Okay, but the point was that it prevented the killing of all those other people in that city, right? So he averted what would have been actually a great disaster for Israel and for Judah to have this result where we're basically killing our own people. Yes. Yeah.
Christ.
Yeah.
You know, when he was doing, when he was mourning Absalom, and Joab came and said, look, you're going to leave Jerusalem, you know, get yourself, pull yourself together and show something to them. I mean, they deserve credit for the work that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are just, mourning the enemy.
Yeah. Okay, anything else about Joab? Kind of an interesting character in the midst of all that. We mentioned, Amasa, and unfortunately he was a little bit too close to Joab. But what do you make of the way in which Joab kind of gets rid of Amasa? I mean, he's moving him out of the way so he can once again take control, but it just seems like such a disrespectful way to go about that, right? You cut somebody open and then just leave them on the ground for animals and whatever else is going to come up. Right? That's how you treat your worst enemies. Right? He's supposed to be a jealousy, yeah. Yeah. We talk about frenemies. He's a frenemy. But at any rate, he's certainly not someone that Joab respected enough to, treat in a better way. Okay, so let's talk about David. Okay, so David, of course, at the center of all of this, really, because he's not necessarily doing many things, right? But he is certainly in the background all the time. Everybody around him who's taking orders from him is seeking to be pleasing to David. We've seen David's reaction previously to attempts at others to take out those who would seem to be enemies to David. And David had kind of a singular mindset that, God is the one who needs to be doing the judgment, right? And in the cases where it was some sort of unrighteous punishment, as he viewed it, on someone else, then he would then take care of that. But we don't see any of that going on here with David. So it starts off, of course, in chapter 18. We have civil war going on. And David, of course, having a little bit of trouble doing fighting now, it would seem, but his men actually refuse to allow him to go into battle with them. And what's the deal with that? Shouldn't the king be going into battle? Okay, so if he gets killed, right, then it's over, right? It's pretty much over. And I guess to the point, right, that's how the followers of Absalom reacted, right, once he was gone. It's like, okay, it's over. We're done, right? So not wanting to risk David being out in the field, they, of course, convince him to stay back. And we see that they went out, and it says there they killed 20,000 Israelites. Right? That's certainly a large number of forces to get killed. And so you think about that, right? These are the people that Absalom had convinced to follow him, right, were really committed to that, right, enough so that they went out and were in battle against their brothers, basically, right? Fighting against each other.
That seemed a bit difficult. That, brothers in different tribes could turn against each other that much.
Mm-hmm.
But, like you said, that's what it was back then.
Yeah, but we've seen that before, but it was due to sin, right? They were, we think about the moments when they're trying to get sin out of the camp, kind of the words they use, right? And so, hey, we need to go get rid of this sin, right? I don't care who it is. It's against what God wants, and so we have to get rid of it. This, of course, is none of that. This is people following people and having war because people can't get along with people, right? That's a lot different than, you know, someone doing something directly against what God has said and then someone seeking to punish on behalf of God by following the law, right? Okay. We kind of mentioned a little bit a moment ago about, you know, why this is a question six in the questions, but, you know, why did the death of Absalom end the rebellion? Any thoughts?
He was trying to be king. It'd be the same thing that would happen if David were a guy.
Okay. And number seven gets into a little bit of something else, right? So he was not only trying to be king, right? He was trying to set up things that would be memorials, right? It says there in verse 18, right? He had set up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to preserve my name. So he named the pillar after his own name. And it is called Absalom's Monument to this day. What's that say about Absalom's intentions or his motives in what he was doing?
He felt that he was worth the world remembering him forever.
Okay. That he might be worshipped even, yeah. Have we seen this before? Where people set up monuments to themselves and kind of, you're shaking your head, you know, so.
I'm trying to remember some of Saul here. My computers.
Your computer. I like how you said that. The memory upgrade, right? Yeah. Now we've seen that many times before, right? We had the back in Judges and in some other places where people setting up, we could call them idols in some cases, right? But setting up some kind of monument that basically is like a memory to them, and you know, taking people's focus off of God. And certainly any time that that's happening, that's a distraction. That's not what what God is expecting from his people. And it didn't work out so well for Absalom. Okay, so David in all of this, right? How about the people inviting David back to be king? What do you make of that? Right, he was the king. He was the one that they were to be serving anyway, and they've kind of kicked him out when Absalom came and David ran away and all of that. But now they're inviting him back as king over Israel. What do you make of that? That seems strange, I don't.
David's all they got. You know, he's a mighty warrior, and he's the one that, you know, brought all the things about that brought that kingdom together before he starts all, has all these fights. But they got him else to go to.
Sure.
Go back to Judges if you.
Okay.
If you can get God to bring you some judges if you don't go back to David.
Okay, okay. That's it. Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Eric, you.
You see that Absalom's death ends the rebellion because this was all about Absalom. And that kind of leadership, it just results in confusion when it's removed because there was never really clear leadership. It was all about him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you compare that to David, who is, beginning of battle, he listens to his people and he makes the choice that at least logically seems like it's the best choice for his people. And then if it had gone the other way, let's say David is killed and Absalom takes over, I kind of think that Absalom's going to wipe out everybody who's led to David and was in his camp.
Yeah.
He's going to have none of that. I kind of think, well, why didn't David feel that way about everybody who kicked him out of his city and followed his rebellious, treasonous offspring? It's, I don't know, I'm baffled in a way, but David being a man after God's own heart makes me think that he's looking out as a selfless leader.
And even as a direct example, right, with this Shimei, that's how you say his name, right? He's basically saying, we were fighting against you, and of course the thought is that, well, that must mean he's going to die, and to your point, right, David is like, no. Nobody's going to die here. We're done with that, right? There's nobody is going to die, right? So, yes, David even being forgiving where others can see it, right? So not just up in the palace and kind of in private doing all of this, but in front of others so they can see. And I imagine what kind of impact that should have had on those who were observing it, right? Man, they were just fighting against him, and he's forgiving. He's forgiven all these guys. We're supposed to kill them.
What were we thinking?
Yeah, what were we thinking? Yeah. Did you have your hand up?
No, I was just thinking kind of summer. Every movement in humankind that I can think of has got to have one or two movers that moves that along. Otherwise, it kind of fragments and falls apart. Think about how many false messiahs came forward.
Oh, sure.
And then, when they're killed or destroyed or whatever, that movement falls away, but there's another one somewhere. Like Eric was saying, Absalom was about Absalom.
Mm-hmm.
And he convinced some other people for different reasons that he was the fix, but when he went by the wayside, you don't have my boys anymore stirring everybody up. So those kind of things just seem to fall apart.
Yeah.
And I did find what my brain was thinking about in 1 Samuel chapter 15, after Saul kills the Amalekites, except Amalek, it says that he went and created a monument for himself.
Mm-hmm.
What a great victory I have. Here's a monument for me.
Mm-hmm.
So we see an example of folks doing that.
Yeah. Okay, and of course, David also has to deal with what Absalom has left behind. Of course, we saw in the previous lesson Absalom going into the concubines that David had. And of course, here we have, David kind of dealing with this really the only way he can, right? And basically, they become like widows, right? So they continue to be able to live where they are, and he's taking care of them, but they basically are kind of off limits to David, as it were. Okay, we also had Mephibosheth, who came back in the picture here, and there's two Mephibosheths. I wouldn't have thought that was a common name, but there's two of them in the story. But the Mephibosheth, that's the grandson of Saul. We recall in the last lesson, right, where Ziba, who was the attendant to Saul, basically was able to get some control over, control may not be the right word, have some influence with Mephibosheth by actually continuing to take care of his properties. But we saw that he tricked David in the previous lesson. And so here, Mephibosheth is basically trying to get back what is his, and David kind of not really being sure about that, just basically, you know, splits the property up. Not really a good outcome. I mean, that seems unfortunate, right? Because David, of course, previously had kind of taken some favor to Mephibosheth. He was looking for someone within Saul's family that he could honor, if you will. And he had found that in Mephibosheth. But unfortunately, Ziba intervenes and tricks him out of that. Okay, and then we have these other characters. Barzillai, this older gentleman, Barzillai the Gileadite, and he provided some protection and sustenance to David while he was out of the country, or rather in a different region. And so David offering him to be able to come back, and he's declining, and basically says, yeah, you can take my son if he'll go. And of course the son goes, Chimham, and lives there with David when he returns. And then we mentioned a little earlier Sheba. And so this, unlike with Absalom, this doesn't last very long, right? So Sheba, I guess, sees an opportunity to start another rebellion and try to get people to once again go against David, tries to once again get the kingdom split up. And we have Joab, who we mentioned earlier, meeting at the walled city, because they were, of course, trying to bring enough of a show of force that, you know, there wouldn't be any issues once they overtook them. But of course he makes it into this walled city, and that's where we see Joab making his deal with the woman at the wall. And basically she has enough influence with the townspeople that once she makes this deal, she goes back in. That's chapter 20, verse 22. And basically tells them what the deal is. Hey, you give them the head of Sheba and he's going to go and leave. And he kept his word, and that's kind of what happened. So, not a good end for Sheba. I think that's the manner in which Joab would probably have expected that David would have reacted for Absalom. Right? Here's somebody who's trying to take over the kingdom, trying to create an uprising. Well, has created an uprising. Is splitting the kingdom, and we need to do something about it, and we need to do it quickly. Yes.
We know that God gave David the kingship. He didn't give it to Absalom.
No.
And what is, to me, what's happening is God wants David to be in the line of Christ. And that's not going to let somebody take over his kingship said, your kingship will always, you know, have trials.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else had their hand. Did you have your hand? Okay.
And just to that.
Oh, point, you had your.
It was more than God wanted. God had promised to David that his line would be established. So,
yeah.
So God's not going to go back on his word despite David's sin. David's sin is what caused all of this. And to Eric's point of why David didn't, but why, as he should have done, or a question rather, why didn't, I have to believe it's because this all root cause analysis, this goes back to David murdering someone.
Mm-hmm.
Because he slept with his wife. He's right here.
Yeah.
That's what all this is about. And David knows that. So far be it from a murderer to turn his head in on all this course of action. Not to say he should or shouldn't have, but I'm just saying it's hard to raise your hand knowing that you too were a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that registers with David, which causes judgment. Creates this whole spectacle of events that carry out far beyond. It doesn't change God's promise, but it absolutely does make it much worse than it had been. And that's a lesson for us all.
Yeah, so we as sinners, as we look at other sinners, right, we have the same difficulty, right? We have to consider the promises that we have, and certainly what promises God has made to us, and what the requirements of that promise are, right? And then think about how is it that we communicate to others that they too can have the promise that God made to us and to them, because we're sinners too, right? And we're not innocent. So it is a thought lesson in there, right? About how do you live in a world that seems to be out of control in the midst of God's promises, right? And we're trying to do that every day. So I think we're being successful, right? We came to Bible study this evening. That's a good way to do it, because we could reset and say, oh yeah, that is what God promised, right? We do have promises from God, right? And in the midst of all of the craziness that's going on, and chaos, and things that just seem to go wrong, we can keep our faith, and have hope, and be strong, and smile, because we have promises. Yes.
This world, which needs every bit of light here.
It does. Okay, so we are coming to the end. And on next week we will finish up. Again, this is called it's titled as an appendix to David's reign. And we have some non-chronological kind of stuff all smashed and jammed in together, and we will go through that. And hopefully we'll be able to sum up at the very end what all of this is left behind for us to do with it. Because then we're going to talk about kings. And David as an old man.